Damie's attacking. And I was like, she's not even getting out of the saddle. What is she doing? He's like, he just took a deep breath. And I was like, she's basically saying namaste, bitches. Like, she just took like this deep breath and is like, I think I'm going to pedal a little harder now. Is that okay? And then she was gone. Oh, hey, and welcome back to the Move Femme podcast. I think they gave me the keys to the castle again today, but we are going to dive into the recap of the fabulous 8 days of racing at La Vuelta Femenina, or as Lance would say, the Women's Tour of Spain. Okay, sorry. I tried to do my best Lance intro as possible, but I'm pretty sure I nailed it. And oh boy, we had some great racing over 8 days in Spain with bold attacks, slippery roads, high mountains. And today I am joined by two co-hosts, of course, my beautiful and talented world champion of a co-host, Mari Holden, who does not look like she is staying in a rosewood for once. Mari, where are you?
I'm in Mallorca, and it is definitely not a rosewood, but it's been amazing.
And for those that were not on the live, you should have seen it before. Mari is in a hotel room that's not a rosewood, so we could see the bathroom, some laundry hanging there in the back. But also we had a cameo from our HR, which is also Court. Courtney, come say hi.
Courtney. God. You're cute.
So you guys are calling from Mallorca.
Mm-hmm. We're in Mallorca. We've been doing an incredible climbing week with Aspen Pro Cycling and Dean Hill.
Biggest week of my life.
30,000 feet of climbing, I heard.
30,000 feet. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem like it. This is the most amazing place on earth. I'm convinced.
Awesome. Well, you guys don't look tired at all. We look tired. So
don't lie to us. We know what we look like. We're tired.
And so thanks for joining us from Mallorca. And of course, you guys all know my other co-host here. We have Spencer Martin. And Spencer is such a treat to have on the show because he can geek out on power numbers, gradients, all the bike dork stuff you guys need. So he's dialed in here. So welcome, Spencer. Where are you calling in from?
Thanks for having me back. I'm coming from Boulder at my house, Boulder, Colorado, not Mallorca. It's cold here. I'm jealous, Mari. I've been following Courtney all week on Instagram. I wish I was there, even if that meant climbing 30,000 feet in a week, which is not easy.
No, that sounds very
awesome.
Hard.
And we would have loved to have you here.
Oh, thank you. I'll be there next year. Got the official invite.
So as we dive in here, we're looking at the La Vuelta Femenina. So it's 8 stages. So 8 days of racing covering 867 kilometers. And I think we had a few themes that happened throughout these 8 days. There's very dramatic racing. There was crashes and rain and mountaintop finishes. And of course, our queen, Damie Vollering, of course, ends up in red. Once she takes red, she does not give it back.
Yeah. Well, I was coming into this. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mari.
No. Go ahead.
Oh, I was coming into this race with a bit of a crackpot theory of like, Demi doesn't look as good this year. You know, is she going to bobble this Vuelta? And then the first few stages, I thought there's some daylight of hope. You know, the Kristen Faulkner on stage four when she rode away. And I think that was, stage four rode away one. Vollering was a little, kind of in the back of that group. I thought, there's some daylight here. And then no. From stage five to stage eight, she kind of looked like the Demi of last year, and there was no hope for anybody else. So I was wrong, quite wrong.
I never doubted her.
Yeah.
I don't play favorites, so.
you don't play favorites. I mean, but I have to say, like, I also came in, Allie, the same as you a little bit. I am playing a favorite too. I thought I had faith that she had planned her season out really well and was kind of coming into form at the right time. And so it was fun to watch it this week, seeing her, become the Demi that we were thinking we'd see earlier in the season, and just that she's timing things pretty well, taking the doubt out of it.
She really did. She placed a lot of faith in her team. So we have to give full credit to SD Works Pro Time there, where these are riders that often get unsung in podcasts and all the glory, but you have teammates that are working so hard to set her up. One of her Blanca Voss was in the red jersey 2 days during the race, which was kind of unexpected. But you're looking at Sakini was in the break today, and also Marlon Reusser coming back from a broken jaw and racing and just is her last teammate standing in these breaks and protecting her. And so Damie has a lot of teammates that she should definitely has and will thank. And for her to have that confidence and cool, calm composure, like you're saying, Mari, she did. She took the spring. Her spring was a little less exciting as it was last year, where she was the Triple Crown Ardennes winner and the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift winner. And so she did take that. And I felt like she was calm under pressure. She knew what she could do and really had full faith in her team and the plan, in which we saw that, because there was an exciting sprint finish where Music won the stage. On stage six, she outsprints Damie at the line, but Damie was like, yeah, go for it, because I'm going to win the overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also interesting to just think about team dynamics and what's going on, right? So I feel like in the classics and earlier on, she was more a team player, but there was so much drama going on about the team signings and all these kinds of things. I think that in this race, all of that was removed from the issues. She could just, like, she was riding into form. She was able to just kind of more focus on what she was doing. Some of the drama was taken out of the picture. She has Reusser back. She has her team around her. And I think that gave her that kind of boost of quiet confidence, you know? And so it was nice to watch her, you know, riding herself into things. And like you said, I mean, it's her normal style, same as Flesh Alone, just riding the front. And then, you know, I mean, she didn't win at Flesh Alone, but she kind of likes to ride on the front of the race. And the same thing happened that day with Music. And, you know, she was just riding her race. Works in a state race, not in a 1 day race.
Yeah. And as you know, Mari, being very successful on the road as well, like I said, legit world champion here that I'm speaking with. But stage racing is completely different, because there are stages for grab, but there's the overall that is most important. And I am going to stir the drama pot here. It's a little drama llama pot right now. That stage six with the Vita Music outsprinting Damie on Laguna Negra. And actually, I will say music is more punchy. Like, so she gets like fourth at Flesh Alone. I mean, she's a very punchy rider. Similar to like a Cecile style, like she can climb, but she's also got a good kick on her. However, I did say on the last podcast that the rumors were Damie might be going to UAE, but Johan corrected me and he says it's FDJ. Music is attacking her and wins stage six, which I actually think she legitimately won, but could that be her future teammate?
I was thinking the same thing, Allie, when that happened. I was like, oh, it's like, we have current teammate drama and now we have future teammate drama all at the same time. I mean, I guess Avita Music probably doesn't care. You know, she's not thinking, oh, this is my future teammate. She's probably thinking I need to win as much as I can. But that did cross my mind when she outsprinted her. And I thought Music looked really good. 24 years old, finished pretty well in the GC. I guess we should say Demi Vollering won. I think that goes without saying. But then Rihanna Marcus, that's how you say her name, right?
Yeah, it's Rihanna Marcus. She's a Dutch rider. She races for Team Jumbo-Visma Lisa Bike. I think she was the tallest woman in the race. She's 6 feet tall. So she beats Marlon Reusser by a little under an inch, which is just a fun fact because I'm a tall woman as well. And her sister, I will just say, her races for SD Works Pro Time as well, who is not at La Vuelta Femenina, but Femke Marcus races for SD Works Pro Time. And Rihanna Marcus has an interesting story. If you look at a result, it's very consistent throughout the classics, hard races, stage races. She's just always in there in the top 10. And these are races that are really hard, like Amstel, Liege, Paris-Roubaix, Strada, Flesch. Like, she's been up there, but she often serves as a domestique for Marianne Vos. And I'm getting all those A's and the Dutch mixed up right here, but I got it. So we'll just say Voss is boss here, which we need to dive into. But Rianna Marcus, I think, had an incredible ride, very consistent, protecting Voss throughout the 8 days. And finally, when it gets a longer climb, Voss was in the break today, obviously, which was interesting, which we need to talk about. But Marcus, these are good. Like, and she has been working really hard. So she is a Dutch national champion, former Dutch national champion. You guys know how hard it is to be a Dutch national road race champion, because you can imagine who you're up against. Not only like Van Vleuten, in the previous time, which she actually beat in the time trial. So she's also a Dutch road race national champion and a former Dutch national time trial champion, which she got to work with the men's team. And I read this very interesting article where she got really into the aerodynamics and perfecting her time trial skills. And she's tall and very powerful. And to see her on those long sustained climbs after being a domestique most of the week, I kind of want to give her a boomstick for how like impressive she rode.
Yeah, I mean, she wrote incredible. And I agree on the boomstick thing, Allie. You know, I think you nailed it on that one.
She kind of secretly did it. It was like silent assassin Marcus style. I don't even know she had that. But, you know, you watch her work. She's getting bottles for Voss. She's like working, and she's making splits, closing gaps. And then the last day, Lamborghini, Elisa Longo-Borghini, lost a minute. And Marcus was ahead of there. So I like to look at these climbers too today on the last mountaintop finish on stage 8, what climbers were shining and what climbers were faltering.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Evita Music, to go back to her, looks like a punchy climber, you know, almost like shockingly thin. And then, yeah, the moment I saw Rianna Marcus, I like looked up her height. I was like, she must be like the tallest person in this race. And apparently she
was. I checked.
And that, you know, that's really impressive to be climbing that well. To, you know, she got dropped, but, you know, she was ahead of Longo-Borghini, who finished third overall in this race. I thought climbed really well. And I've thought for a long time, if anyone's going to be better than Demi Vollering, like eventually someone will beat Demi Vollering. I don't think it's going to come from a small climber. I think you kind of have to fight fire with fire, and you just have to be so powerful, but also able to climb. And I'm not saying it's Rianna Marcus, but I think that style of rider, like that, you know, that type of rider kind of started to dominate men's GC racing, like around the, you know, like think of like Bradley Wiggins and then Chris Froome. I kind of wonder if this is the early era of 6 foot tall Dutch time trialist taking over climbs in women's cycling.
That's a good point.
In one way, I feel like, you know, we weren't going to talk much about like Neiman Doma being ill, but I think that would have been an interesting matchup in this one. Not that she's tall or anything like that, she's bigger than her, but I feel like, you know, it could have been a completely different race had some of the people who crashed out or, you know, gotten ill not been in the race still.
And she was sick, right, Allie? Sick. She was actually riding pretty well, and then she didn't start stage 6.
I didn't think she looked good the whole time. That's where we can start with stage 1 was a team time trial, which is always a chaotic start, but it's an interesting way to get leaders' jerseys out there. Because the big news on stage 1 being a team time trial, and I have podiumed at the UCI World Championships in this discipline, and I love to hate it because it's one of the most difficult disciplines in the sport, a team time trial. The song, like, I don't know, I can't feel my legs when I'm with you, is how I feel. Like, you start hating your teammates as you're like going full gas through technical turns, and Little Trek pulled off the win with a horrific crash in the final turn into the finish of the team time trial. And they still won. But Ellen Van Dijk did try to race a couple stages after. She had some major stitches in her chin. It really screwed up how they finished. And I'm very happy that she's safe because I was very worried about her Paris ambitions. But she came back. She tried a couple stages, realized that she was unable to help the team. But she did do a cute Instagram story of her. We've talked about Ellen a lot because she's just coming back from having her child. So she's been on maternity leave. So she did a cute story where her son is trying to roll over as this infant. And then she's like under her bike. She's like, I'm also trying to roll over. And she's bleeding like severely from her face. But Little Trek, I think, still with that, they waited because their pace line obviously got messed up with a crash in the middle of it. And they waited and they all finished at the same time. And so they had to wait for Degman and Riolini, who was their GC hope. So Gianna Riolini was their GC hope. And they waited for her. She came back. So she actually ended up with the first red jersey. But then they start stage two and you've got the best climber, the best sprinter, and everything's little trek, which is kind of funny because there was no climb in the time trial. There was no sprint. There's no like, but they lined up with every single jersey for stage two. But I'm very happy to hear that the crash wasn't worse than it looked because it was quite horrifying.
Yeah, it looked really bad, but it definitely didn't. I think that when you have something like that happen so early in a race, it definitely set the team vibe. Even though they had the red jersey, not the way you want to start. They had every jersey, but they had everything against them, right? One of their best domestiques basically injured, you know, and they really needed all the team power in order to help Gaia if she had been okay, right? Riolini. And then, you know, and then it kind of went to where's the support for Longo Borghini, you know? So I think those things add up over time. And it just was, it was an unfortunate, like, start to this big race for just across the board on the team.
Yeah, it was pretty gnarly, actually.
Yeah.
Don't look at it unless you have a strong stomach.
I think the big story from the team time trial, this is actually hard to believe. So seven woman teams, correct?
Yes.
Canyon Schramm finishes 8 seconds back with five riders. Am I correct?
Pretty amazing.
Five riders and only four were pulling.
Yeah, because that's unbelievable. I mean, so that would tell you Nia Vedoma probably had some sort of form, and then she finishes fourth in the sprint the next day, probably just trying to stay out of trouble because there was quite a few crashes in the final. But that's also a testament to Zoe Backstedt, how powerful she is in the time trial.
Yeah, we had two Backsteds racing at the Vuelta, I believe, right? On Little Trek and on Canyon SRAM. So two sisters racing. But yeah, it was, I was impressed with Canyon SRAM's ride. And they were too. They posted a lot about it. But only four women pulling and 8 seconds behind Little Trek, which I think Little Trek was going to be 20 seconds faster barring the crash. But I mean, this is one of Mari's favorite riders because we don't play favorites on this show, is stage two. There was a lot of crashes through the roundabouts. It was a quick finish. It was severely slippery and wet and raining. And Mari's gal, Allison Jackson, AJ wins the stage. And of course she does her dance moves, which are a lot, but they're also very heartwarming.
They are heartwarming. And I mean, it was, you know, seeing it, just the race kind of played into her favor, being in good position, being, you know, like riding smart and stuff. And it ended up working out for her. I mean, everyone's just there cheering and being like, oh my God, you know, and I think the whole world just gets excited when AJ wins because she's just such a personality. But I mean, I think a big part of that was the lead out by Kristen Faulkner, which I think is a big, you know, theme through this, like Vuelta too, because Kristen kind of stepped herself up to another level, I think, in this stage race. And I think is just putting herself out there as someone who's really coming into her, like her time, right? Not just her form for this year, but I think she's stepping up into, you know, being a leader in the peloton now, someone who's going to be, you know, that you're going to be keeping an eye on to win some big things. So it was just like, I mean, you know, it was like, so you wake up and you're just like, oh my God, like these things are so incredible.
Yeah, so Faulkner solos to the win. She's in a very elite group on stage four, which was marred by echelons, which we talked about in the pre-show. But you don't usually think about the Vuelta as like an echelon-ridden stage race, but echelons played a huge factor into the general classification. So not only did you have to climb well, you had to be a good damn bike racer that makes those splits. And, you know, Mari and I know how hard that is. Like when I see that Faulkner's in that split, I just am like, bow down, props to you. And Lily Williams also made the split, Mari. Yeah. Speaking of American riders, I just, she didn't get a result, but just to make those echelon splits is harder than you think. When it comes down to 16 of the best riders in the Peloton, and we have a couple Americans in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the American women have been kind of, they haven't been there in the early season racing and in the classics. And so, you know, I've been wondering, when are we going to see them coming to the front? I've been saying, okay, we're going to start seeing it now that we're going to have some stage racing coming up. But to see it happening in a like echelon type situation, and Kristen Faulkner and Lily Williams both like being in the mix like this, it's exciting for American racing. But, you know, but it's also super exciting on just like watching Kristen kind of coming into her own right now. So it's a cool time to be following American cycling in general, but now the women are there too. Cause I mean, we had huge results in the mountain bike and the World Cups, and then in the men's racing, and now the women's are stepping up in good time.
And the lead out on stage two was picture perfect. Mm-hmm. But do you guys think, was EF feeling any pressure before that? I mean, this is their first World Tour win of the season. They're a brand new team. It was launched with a lot of fanfare. Was there pressure building before Jackson, you know, released the valve there?
I find it really interesting because I feel like one of the things they've gotten right is I don't believe that they, yes, there's always pressure, but I don't think that EF drives it from just this like pressure to win. I feel like they've got this like team kind of thing going on where they're working together and they're, I hate to use the word like vibing off each other, but that's kind of what it looks like. And it's kind of what's really fun to watch is that they've, for however they've done it, they've really built like this really cohesive team. And it's exciting to see what happens when a team comes together and can really just like feed off each other. And I think that that's one of the most fun things about cycling or team sports is when you've got that kind of momentum going on. And I feel like right now they've been the underdog. They've like come together and they're working together and they're really excited for each other. And it's fun to watch. And so I don't know that it was like a pressure of, oh, we have to win because EF stepped up and is now like supporting a women's team. I think it's more like, they believe in us and we're going to go for it too. And they've come from this underdog position and now they're in it. Maybe the pressure is going to come now, right? Cause they've actually been winning and now there's an expectation.
I thought it looked amazing. And I think I felt this vibe. Oh no, Mario, use the word vibe.
I know. I'm sorry. It was all I could think of.
It's funny you say vibe. I talked to a pro last week and the thesis was like, you can't underestimate the power of vibes in a team. Like everyone kind of overlooks it from the outside. So you're onto something, Mari.
Yeah. I have worked a lot harder in my career for a GC leader or a team that I like, that I quote unquote vibe with. More so if somebody tells you to not get dropped, get back in the caravan and get to the front and start pulling or lead somebody out. But you're kind of like, I could get top 10 here if I don't work. Instead, like when you have full belief in the power of your team, it's like, it's totally different of how much effort. And Mari has always been good at that, getting that from her athletes when she switched from being a world champion professional cyclist, which you always are.
I hope you're not like, I hope you're thinking that's when you're riding for me.
Yeah, but you need somebody in the radio that's telling you that you're like strong and fast and this is the purpose. And then you need to also like the riders you're working with and that you get along at the dinner table and you're, you know, there's not this negative feelings. I don't know. I like the vibe. It's a word that's overused, but I think there's something to that. But actually, I have a lot of more things to say. But as we're diving in, Spencer, I just need to remind you something very important. It's a Sunday. I guess today is Sunday, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Have a margarita. But also in 1 week from today, it's Mother's Day. And I don't know if you guys remember that. And Mari, I know that your mother's passed away and we love her. And you are a dog mom as well. And you have been a team mom to so many of us. But I do want to give a shout out to our sponsor, OneSkin. And Mari actually has gotten me on OneSkin. I have it here. It's just like sitting here because it's my daily routine. So I start with a little prep. You can see it's almost out. I do a little eye, the topical treatment for the eye, and I do the OneSkin OS01 face. And Mari reminded me last show, because aging's a thing, is she reminded me about the top of my hand. So Mari, I've been trying to put it on the top of my hands too. And then also remember I should wear gloves when I ride because we're outside a lot. But we do want to thank OneSkin for sponsoring the show. And like I said, Mother's Day is coming up. So biological mothers, adopted moms, moms and memories, pet moms, but everyone deserves healthier skin. So just not on Mother's Day, but every day. But Spencer, go buy that card and maybe like send your mom some OneSkin. It's an amazing product that's scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging.
Well, your skin is looking fabulous. I need to say right now.
It's looking, because of you and OneSkin. You and OneSkin.
And I mean, I agree. Like skincare is so important. And having been here in Mallorca all week where, you know, the sun is shining and it's, you need to be protecting yourself. You know, I'm constantly reminded about how important it is to take care of your skin. So I'm equally thankful that OneSkin is like supporting us, Anna. And now that I'm seeing you in the screen here, you look great.
Well, I'm trying to keep up with you.
It's working. Yeah. But you know, it's also the peptides and stuff, they're reversing skin damage. So I think it's not just about like, you know, moving forward, like taking care of it, like your skin's just going to stay the same. It's actually, you know, if your skin's been aging and you're starting now and taking care of it, it's actually going to help you reverse skin damage. So, you know, it's important no matter where you are in your journey.
So Spencer, you have to look no further than right here with our bottle of OneSkin. Are you married, Spencer? I should know that.
I am married. So this is a key reminder that you've brought up. I'm not ashamed to say this is news to me that it's Mother's Day next Sunday. I'm glad I'm here to hear this. And your conversation on the last show, like stuck in my head so much about the aging skin. Like my hands look terrible. I got to get some OneSkin on my hands. I got to start wearing gloves.
I know. OneSkin is great. So for your wife, your mother, just do also remember, buy that card and send it because, you know, mail can be slow sometimes. But OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code FEMME or FUM. Whoever wants to correct me on the internet, that's FEMMES at oneskin.co. 15% off dot, ooh, sorry about that. 15% off oneskin.co with the code FEMME, FEMMES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. And I think Spencer's going to be dialing into that and saying, I heard about it from Mari and Allie on the move.
Yeah, you might hear some shopping for the rest of the show as I select through the OneSkin products.
I like my trio. I'm just going to say a little skin wash, a little eye, a little full face. And then I started doing it on my hands like Mari suggested, and also on a rock that has lived in my knee for quite some time. But that's just crashing. But speaking of amazing products, we do love you. Thank you so much, OneSkin. Amazing product / goat / human being. Marianne Vos wins two stages this year at La Vuelta Femenina. And I'm just going to say she was the best sprinter there because the race was so, the sprint finishes were very marred by not only crashes, but also the echelons and the wind. And when she sprinted to win, I'm going to say she had just daylight between her and she won stage 3 and stage 7, and stage 7 marked her 253rd road race win. What?
Yeah, that's a lot. Were you guys watching stage 3? Stage 3 looked miserable. Like you get these, you know, Spain, Johan would be able to tell us better, but it's like a crust almost. So you get these like high plains, and it just feels like they're going up 1% forever and ever and ever, which is probably in there. They're wide open, so you can't get crosswinds. But it looked miserable. But just halfway through the race, you're just like, well, Voss is going to clean up this sprint because this is putting fatigue in people's legs. This is where she shines. And she, that was one of the most impressive sprint finishes I've seen all year. It was really powerful.
Like, people were sprinting, I swear. But the only person I saw sprinting was Voss. Like, she was like, wait. Oh, should I go now? Oh, should I give them a little bit more time. And then she just like turns on her rocket boosters. Bam. Like, she's just like, she could have had a gel in between like when she started her sprint and when she crossed the finish line.
Yeah, it's fun to watch her racing. She is just like a racer's racer, you know? It's just, she's just so impressive. And when she turns on those, you know, rockets, she just goes. It's amazing.
And I walked the Olympic road race course last week in Paris.
Fun fact, there you go. And tell us more. Is it Voss's course?
Stage, I was thinking, I think she looks better this year than she's looked in years. And you got to think that she's also looked at that course and thought, this is my Olympics to win. And I mean, how incredible would that be? What, the last one she won was 2012. So she'd win assuming she wins, like a 12-year spread between your Olympic titles is unbelievable.
Blaise said the same thing too. He's like, Olympics much? I mean, granted there, but she was dropping like Charlotte Acool's in the race. There's sprinters there, but the stages were so hard, which happens in the Olympics as well, because it's a smaller field. Team dynamics change because you're racing for your country versus your trade team. And watching the way Voss just like waxed when she sprung, like it was,
you know, was, I mean, I think it's also interesting that, you know, things are coming together at the right time for her for this Olympics. You know, I mean, off of the Vuelta, it's kind of, you know, she's had these iliac artery issues. It seems like they've been resolved now, because after her first surgery, it wasn't very long before we started noticing her having issues again before they said, okay, now we're going to redo the surgery. And then, but now she's like riding herself into form. It's kind of the Marianne Voss that we saw before. And a lot of that, I think, is because like these issues that she's had with her body going on that have been holding her back. Now she's able to train to the level and like get back in there and race. And the timing is just coming around right for the Olympics, which is so fun to see. And I mean, when you've won 253 races and it's heading into Paris, you have to be thinking that, you know, that it has to be on her mind that this is her year, right? I mean, she's had a very difficult last few years.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how she goes there. And you're right, Mari. I'm just like, have full faith in her. She looks like she's having fun. She's got a good team around her. She's as smart and savvy as she's always been, because that can't go away. But her fitness, and also like sitting up on a climb, allowing, you know, climbers to go, like, she's making the splits. But then she was going, she got the green jersey, obviously. But shoot, I'm just so excited to see this. Dude, Voss.
That sounds like a very like Dutch kind of like word. Yeah. But I feel like, you know, it's, you know, you still, it's not to say that she doesn't have like unbelievable competition. I mean, you know, Lotta Kopecky wasn't here. I mean, there are people that are going to make that race like super exciting, but knowing that we have a Marianne Voss coming into the Olympics and into this time of the year with good form and no injuries, knock on wood, it's going to be a really cool showdown to see the best of the best really out there, like fighting it out for an Olympic gold, right? It's going to be cool.
I think it's going to be awesome.
And let's throw like Kristen Faulkner into the mix somewhere in here too. You know, maybe she goes off the front and like gets the US a medal. I mean, that would be amazing. Kristen Faulkner getting second to Marianne Voss in that stage was like, I mean, when you're watching it, was incredible. And then the lead out that she did for AJ, that she's, I mean, for somebody who's only been racing a few years to be like on that level is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And then the stage that,
go ahead, Spencer.
She won when she attacked. I just thought really well timed, you know, kind of. It was far enough out that makes them think twice about it. It wasn't a great chase behind. I mean, it looked like someone that had been pro for 10 years making that move.
Yeah, she has really good instinct. And, you know, I think she's somebody who really analyzes every detail. So obviously she's thought out this whole thing, but it's fun to see her, like her thought process, like now kind of coming together, the timing, everything's like coming together really well. And she's just racing like a seasoned, athlete. Yeah.
That is one. So we had a couple themes talking on the pre-show about this, but of course the echelons, which was not surprising, but is a little surprising that occurs in something that you like the Vuelta, you think is going to be very mountainous. The other one was the sprints that weren't really sprints or attacks. Faulkner, I think, was in a great position on the stage she won. She was not the first person to attack, which Mario always told me not to be the first person, because you need to like wait, and then go. And she was in such a select group of riders that were staring at each other for GC. She timed it perfectly. She has the time trialing of capabilities. This is looking very positive that she goes to the Olympics, how she's racing and what that's like. But it's also, you know, you have to look at who you're with, and they didn't need to chase her if they're looking at who's going to win the next mountaintop finish. But she timed it right, put out the power and won. And then the same thing on stage 7, when she gets second to Voss, which she did post on her Instagram. That was like winning to get second to Voss. But these were like, it wasn't even a sprint at that point. And you have Lamborghini on her wheel, and like Elisa can't come around her. And she's just like in the saddle, and it was pure power, which is another trend that I noticed. Dami Vollering never attacked. Like, she wasn't like doing these explosive like Pogacar attacks. She just started riding people off her wheel. And I was like, wow, this is fascinating. It's not as like explosive racing, but it's just like raw power, which I definitely saw. Well, we saw very explosive Marianne Vos, raw power from Faulkner, and Dami, I thought too, just confidence of like, to me, watching the last stage and her winning, it looked like a power test to me. Like, she just was like, I wonder what if I can do this.
Yeah. I mean, the Faulkner stuff, it almost would, someone described these type of attacks as like watt dumps. And that's all I could think of. It's just like watts raining down upon everyone. There's no sprint. There's no attack. It's just, I'm sitting in the saddle and I'm holding 500 watts for a minute at the end of a race. Good luck holding my wheel.
So you get what I'm saying, right? You saw it. It was just like, yeah. It is a watt dump. I like that. Hashtag watt dump.
And then on stage 7, I was like, oh, Vollering looks like she's struggling to hold on. And then it's no, that was just got her in shape for stage 8. And then, as you said, I got to do my test, got to get my power test. How has this race treated me? And I would say pretty well, because yeah, it wasn't a big attack on today's stage. She just kind of was, I'm not one of these riders. I think this is more you guys, just like very talented, classy riders, and they can just spin at high wattage. I mean, that's, to me, that's so impressive. She just was kind of out there like tapping out a nice cadence and probably putting out insane power numbers and dropping everybody.
Yeah, she looked really calm. Go ahead, Mari.
No, I was just saying, watching it, she made it look easy. Like, she's just going to get a bottle, but then I'm going to keep like going off. I'm going to just keep going, you know. It was pretty impressive to see.
Yeah, on stage, I think it was stage 8. Stage 5, when she attacked, but she had music on her wheel. Stage 6, I guess that was. Maybe it was 5. Anyway, so she's just riding on the front. Like Mari said, she likes to ride on the front. And we're watching it in the morning. And Blaise like looks at me and he's like, Dami's attacking. And I was like, she's not even getting out of the saddle. What is she doing? He's like, he just took a deep breath. And I was like, she's basically saying namaste, bitches. Like, she just took like this deep breath and is like, I think I'm going to pedal a little harder now. Is that okay? And then she was gone.
She just ramps it up and they just can't stay. And you see him back there struggling and, you know, she's just making it look easy and she's just getting into her zone and everyone behind her can't do it.
So big congratulations to Dami Vollering for winning La Vuelta. I never doubted her. Apparently Spencer might have. I don't think Mari doubted her whatsoever either.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say my only, the seeds of doubt, I guess, were planted because of the weirdness with her team management. I just thought that was so frankly disrespectful. I know that statement about we're not retaining her. And then probably in retrospect, she was just shifting her schedule so she could be fitter later into the summer for the Olympics and the tours in August. That's probably what happened. But I read it as, ooh, she's just like, you know, can you imagine? I mean, that would bother me. I just probably wouldn't feel, if the vibes are off, you're not sleeping as well. Your hormones probably aren't firing the way they should. So that's where the doubt was placed in my mind.
I think it was hard not to feel that and see like that there was something going on and planting those seeds of doubt a little bit. But I mean, I think the hope was always like what we were talking about, that she had a bigger plan, and that the year was so the year is so complicated to figure out with so many big goals so close together. And I mean, to have a massive stage race and an Olympics like back to back is a challenge, and also both are later than, you know, than previous years. So that throws off the early season. It just, you know, it's been an interesting like phenomenon to watch, but now kind of seeing it play out is fun to see her like, okay, now she's like getting it back, and you can see the confidence coming back to you, or projecting more confidence. But I think that the fact that she didn't have the drama of the Lotta Kopecky part of the team, whether or not there's any drama in reality with those two, the like looking in from the outside, knowing that that was removed in the Vuelta, was probably a nice relief for her, and having, you know, just being able to go into the race with none of that drama would be nice.
Yeah. I think she looks stellar. You know, and as we're wrapping up, I will talk about Damian Vollering all day long. I'll also watch Matthew Vanderpool ride his bike all day long. But I do need to go for a ride myself, but I would be remiss if we didn't just also celebrate not only the winners that we've discussed. So, you know, Faulkner, Voss, Music, amazing. And of course our ultimate winner being Damian Vollering. But what I was watching too was the riders behind, because we already know Damie's the best in the world at what she does at this moment. And so watching who was climbing well behind her and just riders to watch. So of course we have Rianna Marcus, which I just love, like still boomstick to her to see her excel outside of this domestique role and allowed to climb. And just thinking if she had saved energy throughout the 7 days previous, what she could have done on the last stage. But I do want to watch her. I think that she's going to be in good form, and also how much she's been working on her time trial ability. She's awesome. I don't know. I'm a fan there. And also she just got married last year. I stalked her wedding photos. They're quite cute. Yara Kastelijne from Phoenix Dequinic team was amazing. You know, constantly covering moves, being there. Lisa Longer Borghini. So she's also on our GC podium, and these stages don't quite suit her. The climbs were a little long, but I think, so we didn't see our Lamborghini that we're used to. Like we used to see her attack and attack, but those aren't one day races. And this is a stage race. So she's saving energy. And I think to finish top three overall at La Vuelta, it's that looks good for her form there. And I had this German rider, Ricarda Bonfeind, on Canyon SRAM. And she's just like a consistent top five, top 10. She has never done a world tour stage race without finishing in the top 10 in GC, but she's just the second rider to Diadoma. So just watching her making these splits and climbing. She did win a stage, Mari. You remember last year at the Tour de France Femme Avec Zwift, she won that 40K solo stage. She's young. She came up through Zwift after racing as a junior. She went to college and got her degree. And then through Zwift and Canyon SRAM, she races world tours, but never to do a world tour stage race without finishing in the top 10. And you look at her results, it's like fifth, sixth, like Flesch, Amstel. Like we always pay attention to Cassia because Cassia is that amazing. But I like this Ricarda. I think we need to keep an eye on her, because also when we go to the Olympics, she's racing for Germany, not Canyon SRAM. So Domestique goes away. And I am going to screw up this name, but Mari, you and I and Spencer need to watch this Paulina Rokers. I don't know. R-O-I-J-A-K-K-E-R-S. So good luck to me on saying that. But she finished fourth today on the stage, and her teammate is Yara. And we know Yara Kastelein because she won that impressive stage last year, the Tour de France Femme avec Swift. But I like look up this woman, Paulina, and she's Dutch. And so when you're Dutch, it's really hard to get attention because you got Damien Vollering, you have Marion Vos. Like what else do you want me to list? And I looked her up on her team website and she has no fun facts. So I'm going to say is Phoenix de Quinnick, put some fun facts about her because I want to know more about her.
It's a good little a Ricardo one. That's a good little nugget, Allie. That is interesting for the Olympics. I didn't think about that. Because if you're Dutch, it's a blessing and a curse. I guess a blessing because you're just going to be genetically an amazing bike rider. But the curse is there's so many of you. It's hard to get.
Ellen Van Dyke, Voss, Vollering. Change nationalities.
Also, someone else, Sarah Gigante, I think has been really had a lot of success at a really young age and then had some health issues the last few years and then looked like she's getting back to, you know, where she was 3 or 4 years ago. So that was good to see.
Yeah, I did watch her. She just seemed like she faded a bit, but she seemed to be relatively consistent early on. But 8 days is a long time. Do you guys know who this Paulina I'm talking about? Roy Jacques? Right.
Yeah, I was actually saw her on there and thought, I'm going to avoid her because I don't know how to say that name. I was intimidated by the name.
I practiced it a lot before the show and I got it still wrong. Like I was practicing and still, once again, I need some fun facts about our new friend Paulina, because I think usually Yara is just a little bit ahead of her, but they're in the same group. So these are some young Dutch climbers that are punchy, exciting to watch, and it's an awesome team. So I love that Phoenix, de Quinnick team. As far as the talent that they bring. And then I guess Labuse is the last one. I was watching Juliette Labuse quite a bit. So these are ones we'll talk about in the tour, if not the Olympics, a French rider. But that's all had on riders. I was watching a lot. Okay.
on that note, so this is a long climb. It's like a 12.5 kilometer funnel climb. That's, I would say, one of the longest you see on maybe outside of the Tour de France for a women's race. Is that unusually long? And if so, I would say keep these names in mind because you're seeing climbers that probably don't get the chance to like show their stuff outside of the biggest races. And they could be relevant later in the year.
Damey said the climb was not so hard. And I quote.
Yeah, but Damey well, made it look easy, that's right? The I mean, it's all relative.
The most elevation gained, interestingly enough, in the Vuelta was stage 2, I believe, or is it stage 3, Mari? It was early, but the climbs, like, you know, it was a 20K climb, but it averages at 3.5%. And that's what Damey was saying. She was worried today. The climb looks long on paper, but when you're actually doing it, it's almost just a big ring climb because the percentage gradients didn't really kick up until the end. And then you could see the last couple kilometers were pretty mellow and quite fast. So I actually don't think the climbs were steep enough for the pure climbers to really show their ability, to be honest.
I guess unless we're talking about Demi Vollering as a pure climber.
In my book, she can do anything she wants. So I think we had a very exciting 8 days of racing, watching La Vuelta Femenina. I hope I'm saying that right. Somebody will correct me. Mari's climbed 30,000 feet in Mallorca.
And I'm going to be in Boulder in 2 weeks, Spencer. So we're going to have to grab a coffee or go for a ride.
Yeah, let's go for a ride.
Is there a Rosewood in Boulder?
There is not, but it's going to look better than this.
Sandy, take me, Mari. So thank you all for tuning in and always watch the Femme. Super happy to do the Move Femme here with my co-host, Mari Holden, and of course, Spencer Martin. So yeah, I think that's a wrap, guys. What do you think? Damien Vollering. Oh, wait. Yeah. I don't know. I'd say her name again. All right.
Our queen, Demi.
Mari probably needs some sleep and Spencer and I need to go for a ride. So we'll wrap it up, but we'll see you next time. I think we'll be covering the Giro. So have a great Sunday and don't forget Mother's Day is next weekend. All righty. Bye.
Bye.